This is The Mountain Life. I'm Lynn Ware Peak. Summer in the mountains invites us outdoors. Hiking, biking, gardening, or just long days out on the trail. But while we're enjoying the sunshine, our skin is quietly keeping score. The fine lines, the dark spots, and other signs of sun damage we notice sometimes in the fall often begin developing months earlier, even without a sunburn. Joining me this morning is board-certified cosmetic surgeon Dr. Claudia Kim, who will explain what ultraviolet light is really doing beneath the surface of our skin, how to protect it while still enjoying an active outdoor life, and when a suspicious spot deserves a closer look. Claudia Kim, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thank you so much for having me. Happy to be here.
Well, on this show, we can't talk often enough about sun damage, skin cancer prevention. We have a high altitude here. Utah's very dry. And there's just no shortage of fine lines and dark spots. But let's start here. What is really happening underneath our skin when we are exposed to UV rays?
So UV rays can affect collagen and elasticity. But even before we get into the physiology of it, what does collagen and elasticity mean for youthful looking skin or your face overall? And collagen and elasticity is what provides your face the plumpness, the firmness, the ability to bounce back, the brightness, and ultimately the tightness of the skin as well, and the appearance of wrinkles and you know, surface irregularities. So what happens when UV rays affect collagen and elasticity? It actually releases free radicals that do damage to the structural proteins and also end up triggering these pigment forming cells called melanocytes. And so that is translated into overall facial aging and the way that the skin appears in terms of those qualities that collagen and elasticity mean.
Okay, so we're talking about appearance, the fine lines, the brown spots. Let's talk about how it exposes us or how vulnerable we then become when we have reduced collagen and elasticity to skin cancer.
So obviously those free radicals can continue to do damage and cause mutation of these cells that are ultimately our precancerous cells. And so it's not just about the outward appearance, but it's actually about the function of the skin cells themselves. And so when we are thinking about wearing sunscreen, the main cause is to prevent the formation of skin cancer. But I think a lot more people are more concerned about the way that their face appears rather than the risk to skin cancer itself.
Yes. Let me give you the example of my husband and me. So my husband is constantly getting precancers burned off his skin. However, he has way fewer wrinkles than I do. We're about the same age. And I have these wrinkles from all these years of playing outside. But every time I go, and I go faithfully to the dermatologist once a year, I've never had anything burnt off that's a precancer. And so I'm just wondering, you know, what is that little contradiction there between two people in that example?
So everyone is different genetically. And so some individuals will have a genetic predisposition to have more mutations of the skin cells, while other people just generally don't. And on top of the genetic makeup, there's also environmental factors such as how much sun exposure have you gotten, also the individual's ethnicity and the biological makeup. Some people, they are really prone not to burning. They tend to just tan right away. And those individuals, they tend to have more melanin, which does have a protective measure against the formation of skin cancer. But that still doesn't mean that UV damage to the cell isn't happening. It's just more aesthetic rather than precancerous.
Okay, so what can we do to change our genetic makeup? I know that's a funny question to ask because they're your genes, but what can we do in this case?
So yes, genetic predisposition we can't do anything about, but we can be consistent about protecting our skin from what is predisposed to do. And the most simplest, easiest thing that you can do is really wear a broad spectrum SPF sunscreen.
So we talk a lot about sunscreens on this show, and I know you probably do in your practice. We have the different types, sort of the physical barriers and the chemical barriers. And I always love to ask people like you and dermatologists to take us through what are your thoughts? What is the best thing that we can do? Is it the tinted sunscreens that have the physical block? I know you said broad spectrum, but go into that a little further, please.
So I think there's been a new look or a new insight into the mineral sunscreens. So just to kind of go back, so chemical sunscreens, they need to be absorbed by your body to be an effective barrier. And so for chemical sunscreens, you really do need to let it absorb for about 15 to 30 minutes prior to having sun exposure, versus the mineral sunscreens, which is a physical barrier. So you can ultimately have go out immediately after application. But both of them, they need to be reapplied. And I think there is this misconception amongst a lot of people of, I don't really go outside much, or I only wear sunscreen when I go to the beach or the pool, or I'm driving, or I'm tan. So there's so many misconceptions when it comes to sunscreen, but a lot of the times it is you need to reapply. And that makeup that has the SPF formulation, it's usually not enough. And if you look, there's 15 SPF, there's 30 SPF. You ideally want something that's 30 SPF and higher. And for the tinted moisturizers, they usually put a little tint in it because it's a mineral sunscreen. And so mineral sunscreens, they tend to have more of a white cast because of that physical barrier. And so the tint allows it to give it a little bit more color so it's not so white casted against your complexion.
Right. So what is your recommendation for how often you, and depending on if you're sweating or things like that, how often do you have to reapply?
So whether your sunscreen is in your skincare lotion itself, or if it's even water resistant, you should reapply after about 2 hours. And if you are also swimming or heavily sweating or toweling off, you should reapply. And so I always keep a little powder type of sunscreen, a mineral sunscreen, which also helps to, combat some of the shine. I'll keep that in my purse. And so if I'm heading back out from the office, I'll do a quick reapply for my walk to the train station.
Right. Well, let's talk about that. So we live in a very active community. People are outside. When I go on a 3-hour mountain bike ride, I'm sweating the whole time. And I always start off with my mineral sunscreen. But, at what point is it just, you're shooting yourself in the foot to reapply when you're just sweating it off? Is there, what can we do?
A visor. So I actually wear heavy duty. So even when I'm walking my two dogs and I know it's going to be like a 15, 20 minute walk and it's overcast, I have a visor on. And it's not going to be as comprehensive as sunscreen, but it at least covers some of your face. And we can't forget the areas like wearing sunglasses or having SPF in your chapstick and your hands. So any place that is really exposed, you should be covering up or protecting. And I also have a UPF shirt that I like to wear if I'm going to be out for prolonged periods of time.
Yeah, good advice. We have our bicycle helmets. M many of them have little visors on, but the sun comes in from the sides. There is a huge, kind of like a flop, not floppy, but a
Like a
flexible
wide brimmed.
wide brim visor that you can Velcro onto your bike helmet. And we all ought to have those, but you see about 1 in 10,000 people who actually have those on. It's a Wonderful idea, though.
Well, there are some statistics from the Dermatology Association where only about 56 people wear sunscreen on a regular basis. And of that number, only 20% admit to wearing it on cloudy days as well. And then it's reflected in about 4 out of 10 people already seeing signs of sun damage, like the dark hyperpigmented spots and already early signs of aging.
Well, I am loyal and faithful to my sunscreen. I put it on the first thing in the morning. Of course, I started doing that after, like you say, you've already had all of this sun damage that I'm convinced, my wrinkles and dark spots, they're all a product of what I did in my 20s. So let's talk about young people and
Yes.
how important it is.
So for younger people, you are starting off with a blank slate, and the environmental exposures are cumulative. Sun damage is cumulative. And so when these young individuals, they come into my office and they ask, "Oh, what skincare do you recommend, Dr. Kim?" Or, "There's this $200 cream. Is this really effective?" And so you can spend thousands of dollars on these skincare regimens. They're 9, 10 step skincare regimen. But if you're not protecting your skin against the insult, then you're throwing money away on this investment. And so prevention is the easiest rather than trying to fix something that has already gone awry.
Do you deal with melanomas in your practice?
So I'm a purely cosmetic surgeon, and so I will refer those patients to my dermatology colleagues.
Okay. Peptides, everyone's talking about peptides these days, and I know that there are sort of collagen supporting peptides that they're talking about. Are you familiar with this whole world?
So I do have a little bit of exposure, but I have to admit that I'm not fully comprehensively aware of the different types of peptides that are available. But I am seeing this shift towards biostimulators, where all of these supplements and exogenous products are working on trying to ramp up your own body's protection and your own body's fixing mechanisms. So these biostimulators are definitely taking the industry by storm. And peptides are one of them, exosomes, growth factors, PRP you may have heard of, and now you have PDGF, PDRN. So there's a whole slew of these biostimulators that are working on ramping up your own systems.
Okay. Did you say biostimulators or biosimulators?
Biostimulators. So you're
Simulator. Okay.
stimulating
Yeah.
the fixers.
Yes. Okay. So that brings me to the topic of collagen. And, I put a little scoop of collagen in my coffee in the morning. Part of that is because I get a little protein. And the other part is I have this thought that maybe ingesting collagen is going to do my joints, my tendons, and my skin some good. What do you think about that?
So the formulation of orally taken collagens, so your body has to actually absorb it. And you can't exactly control once the absorption happens where the collagen is going to go. So in theory, we would love for it to go right to the areas like our joints that need it or our skin quality to really benefit from the collagen. But the studies are showing that it doesn't have that direct effect. But there's still a role for it, but it's more so for maintenance and also and I put this category with like the red light therapies is that it's good for maintenance, but it's really hard to reverse or significantly reverse the signs of aging that have happened with orally ingested collagen.
Okay, that makes sense. Is there such a thing as injecting collagen then, if we're taking it orally and we can't pinpoint where it's going?
So biostimulators are actually injected directly into the cells or near the cells for absorption. And so that is what's stimulating your cells that actually produce collagen to start making more.
Okay. You talked about elastin as well, but I don't hear about this out on the marketplace as much as I do hear about collagen. Are there things out there that should biostimulate elastin?
So the collagen and elastin, they work hand in hand. And so collagen is the structural protein that provides like that firmness and the volume and the bounce together with elastin to help with elasticity and the firmness and the tightness and the bounce back ability of the skin.
Okay. Well, in your practice, you are a cosmetic surgeon and you don't practice dermatology, but I'm wondering about the crossover. You know, we have all of these medical grade types of skin cares from, you know, laser treatments to chemical peels and different, you know, biostimulators and things like that. But I'm wondering where the crossover is into derma, you know, not necessarily dermatology, but into cancer prevention. If I am getting, you know, the blue light procedure at the end of a summer to take off the dark spots, is that going to be helping me with cancer prevention or is it just helping me aesthetically?
So it is a spectrum. So UV damage will initially start with the more aesthetically related structural items of their face. And so that's when you'll start to see the signs of like the aging, like hyperpigmentation and the fine lines and the wrinkles and the sagging. But that continuous UV damage can continue to cause more breakdown and more DNA damage. So imagine it as a spectrum. And so when you are seeing certain spots that are getting bigger or they're getting irregular in terms of appearance, like there's discoloration within the mole itself, or if it's crusty or bloody or itchy, things like this is when it starts to become more concerning and you really need to go see a dermatologist or a certified individual to take a look because that is more concerning than just simple sunspots.
If you're just joining me on the Mountain Life, I'm speaking with board certified cosmetic surgeon, Dr. Claudia Kim. And Dr. Kim, you are also a DO, a doctor of osteopathy. Is that right?
Yes.
So that's very interesting. I've always been fascinated by people who are DOs, and they seem to go in a variety of different areas of healthcare. Can you talk to that a little bit? Why did you decide to become a DO instead of an MD, and then how you got into becoming a cosmetic surgeon?
So, a doctor of osteopathy, the overall view is to look at the individual as a whole. And so, it's such an intricate link of different organ systems that it can present in multiple areas, even though it is, you know, a primary concern or a primary ailment. And so, it is that mindset of treating the patient as a whole and to overall improve their health, their mental health, their physical health, and so on.
Okay, interesting. Before I let you go, this is maybe a much more general, broad question and looking towards the future. We have so many medical advancements, but it sure would be nice to take a pill that acts as a sunscreen. And this game of, I mean, down in our bathroom, we have, you know, like 20 different tubes of different SPFs and chemical and physical and all of this stuff. And it just seems like at the end of the day, none of it really, it works to a certain degree, but what about taking a pill or some other systemic thing, looking at the whole, that might, you know, keep us from getting skin cancers?
So a lot of people, well, in prevention of skin cancer, unfortunately, there is no one magical pill that helps us against that. But a lot of it, in looking at the person as a whole, it's not just the sun exposure. That's just one of the causes or one of the inciting factors of aging and cancer. There's also overall sleep and diet. and exercise. So all of these can actually contribute to having a lowered risk of cancer. And a side note is to kind of slow down the effects of aging and just time alone. And so I'm sure people would love to hear that there is some magic medication out there, but it really is something so simple as lowering your stress levels, the cortisol response, and getting enough sleep and getting good food into your system, eating less processed foods. And so these are things that people have heard over and over again, but it really is the answer, funny enough.
Funny enough, I know, and there's really no limit to the number of times that we need to hear it, same as the whole sunscreen talk. So I really appreciate you joining me today on The Mountain Life. Dr. Claudia Kim is my guest. She's a board certified cosmetic surgeon. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much, Lynn. I had a great time.